where the wild winds blow. With a rifle in hand, I'm ready to go. I got my boots laced tight, I'm feeling alive. Hunting that freedom, you know I'll survive. Waking up at dawn to a world so vast, where freedom rings loud and the shadows are cast. With every shot fired, I'm claiming my stake, defending my rights for the country I make. This is my land, this is my fight for the Second Amendment. I stand with all my might, from the mountains to valleys. Ranching life taught me the value of toil, underneath the sun and the rich dark soil. With cattle in line, hear the mooing refrain. Each brand tells a story, a legacy engraved. Fishing in the river where the waters flow free. Casting out lines, it's the place to be. With a cooler of beer in my...
Dakota land where the skies are wide and the freedom stands. With a Bible in my hand and a prayer in my heart, living this life where the wild plays its part. Dust on my boots and my hat pulled low. Got my trusty rifle and I'm ready to go. Hunting the game as the sun hits the sky in the heart of the 701. I feel so alive. Guns and the 701. It's our grand legacy. The rivers run deep as we cast out our lines. Fish in the waters where the North Star shines. Got the warmth of the sun with the chill of the night. With every shot fired, we're ready to fight for the freedom we cherish. The second is true. With family beside us, we stand through and through. Guns in the 701. That's how we roll. Faith in the good Lord. That's sins that they wield. We stick to our values. Our fate is revealed. With the word as our guide, we tread on the earth. A community built from the love, not the curse.
fight. Let the rifles ring out. Let the spirits align. In North Dakota's embrace, our souls intertwine. So when you hear the gunshots and feel that proud sound, know it's faith and freedom that echoes around. From the fields of the ranch to the depths of the lake, with God on our side, there's nothing at stake. Guns and the 71 forever will stand in the heart of our faith in this great free land.
All right, we got volume back. I am so sorry for that, because that was a pretty good opening and a pretty good prayer. Anyway, so the first thing I want to announce here is that we got a great lineup every single week right now. GAT 701 has moved to Thursdays. I'm thinking about moving it permanently there. It just seems like it works out better in my schedule anymore. Tomorrow morning, I shall be returning back, barring any issues, but I should be back on K-Fire. Hey, One Shot, good to have you here. KFYR, Todd Mitchell, Mitchell in the Morning. Of course, that's at 7:15 Mountain, 8:15 Central. And I got a pretty good show, I think, lined up for tomorrow already. I'll send that off to Todd this evening. Blackbeard Logic, 5 p.m. Mountain, 6 p.m. Central, Leon Francis. And Leon's got some great subjects. You never know which rabbit hole he's going to take you down. But coming over there from deep behind enemy lines over in the eastern part of this state. Again, 5 p.m. Mountain, 6 p.m. Central. And then, of course, Sunday morning, 7 o'clock Mountain Standard Time, 8 p.m. Central, Sunday Sportsman's Devotion with Pastor Vance Bishop. I'm telling you, Vance does a great job. We're really happy to have him on board doing that. I always try to get in there. I mean, to me, it just always... he just ties it all in real well. And who knows, I might surprise visit and pop in on him tomorrow or on Sunday morning as well before I head off to church and the Bible study. So again, GAT 701 right here, Thursday night, 7 p.m., 8 p.m. Central. And I may make that the permanent spot. I can't tell. Let me know. I mean, if you think that's a good evening, maybe we'll move it there. I don't know. Otherwise, we'll continue with Wednesday nights. And, of course, 701 Marksman. Now, David had a great show. I finally got a chance to watch it. Great information there, everybody. highly encourage you to go over there and check that out on all of our outlets. It should be archived as well on our GAT701 network website, or gunsin701.com. And of course, on all our streaming platforms, except Fascist Book. After so many days, they've been kicking them off. So I forget how many days they stay on there. But YouTube, they're there right now. They're there indefinitely. So you can catch all that there. All right, everybody, hey, one shot. Hey, Plum Creek Rancher. And then Kelly, good to have you on board from up there in Valley City. I've got a pretty good show, I thought. I'm going to start it off with 9 guns that armed the Wild West's most famous lawmen and outlaws. I just thought this was a pretty cool little thing here. I hadn't done anything like this in a while. The Colt Peacemaker. So the Colt Peacemaker, they call that, remember, the gun that won the West. It's closely tied. And it was also, you know, it pretty much was called the Colt Single Action Army. I have a Colt Single Action Army. Love that gun. It was actually a pretty fancy NRA gun at one time. It's also known, of course, as the Peacemaker. Introduced in 1873, it was a six-shooter, had a cylinder, of course. It was the preferred sidearm of sheriffs, outlaws, and soldiers alike. It had a great reputation for reliability. Still does. They only make so many of these a year. And, of course, stopping power in that .45 Colt. It was a game-changer. And, of course, I don't know how many you see it in the movies. You see it everywhere. But that was a preferred firearm and sidearm. Wyatt Earp carried a Peacemaker during the OK Corral, remember that? And then the outlaw Jesse James, he had one during his bank and train robberies. Jesse James, I remember, well, I think we'll get to this later, but I believe he also carried a Schofield. What made this gun so effective was its durability in harsh conditions, fast reloading system, and it gave gunslingers an edge in life or death situations. Didn't just win duels, it won the West. And if you can feel a little more history on that, yes. That thing, it became nicknamed the gun that won the West because it was one. And even if you remember right, that showed up in the Back to the Future 3 movie, you know, when they were out there, you know, the big Peacemaker and old Marty McFly. Of course, he was the guy that was one of the characters. He went ahead and he hit every target that they had there. He's going to be fighting the big bad Brutus or whatever his name was. So it was made pretty iconically recognized in that movie as well. Hey, Jamie, good to have you on. Good evening. Axe, hey, evening from the northern nest of the Dakotas. Okay. And if you've seen that sign earlier that kind of flashed on there, that's our big sign still out there on Axe's place. We sure appreciate him. As we're right up there by the interstate, you can't miss that big old flag on it. So thanks to Lauer Auto and Axe there for helping us out and being one of our original sponsors. And he's been with us through this whole thing. So thanks, Axe, for being a longtime sponsor. Numbers are looking pretty good, guys. I said X is still over here, but they do not show up in our restream anymore. They've never been able to get that. I think the way it sounds is that they want to be paid for it over at X. So I guess Elon, well, he needs more money. So Restream's not going to do it. The Sharps rifle. Now, the Sharps rifle, pretty iconic. We've seen that in several movies. They called it the Long Range King. And that was something, if you remember, if you ever watched any kind of movies, I think Tom Selleck, that he had a Sharps there. You can get the Shiloh Sharps. They're making them. You can get a reproduction of them. They only make so many, too, but they are expensive, and there's a long waiting list. But they were very trusted because they were known to hit their target at long range. This was your distance gun, and it came through as the buffalo rifle. And if you can remember when the big herds of buffalo, you had your buffalo hunters coming out, and, I mean, they just unfortunately kind of devastated the herds of buffalo, but they were effective at long range and they did the job that needed to be done so that they could get those buffalo skins. It was right here in this article, famous for its extreme range and deadly accuracy. It was a go-to weapon for bison hunters and long range sharpshooters capable of reaching up to 800 yards and gave a serious advantage in both hunting and combat. So if you ever watch, I believe it's Legends of the Fall, you see it in that movie, Dances with Wolves, you'll see one in there. They were used extensively all over this western part of the area here in the middle of the country because of their efficiency and their accuracy. Billy Dixon, he's a legend. If you go look him up, there's some great books on him. And he used the Sharps to take down enemies from over 1,500 yards away. Think about that. You know, several people are shooting 1,000 yards a day. They're even shooting a mile. But they're not using the technology out of a Sharps like they were back then. So when you really think about that, 1,500 yards away, and they were using, and he was using that to take out enemies. It played, like I was talking about earlier, it played a very pivotal role in taking out the buffalo. Its precision made mass hunting efficient. It wasn't just a gun. It was a game changer in both hunting and in warfare. And it would be. If you've never had the opportunity to hold a real Sharps, they're pretty cool. They're heavy, but they're not so heavy you can't take them anywhere. So What a monumental achievement back then. Hey, Steve, good to have you on tonight. Hey, I haven't seen Steve in a long time, so good to have you listening in tonight, Steve. Yeah, if you got any questions or any comments here, go ahead and throw them in there too, by the way. I do have it monitored, and I should put them up there. I'm sorry, I didn't put them up there tonight. There, we'll drop that in there. Hopefully you guys can see them. The double-barreled shotgun comes in at number 3. Now, the shotgun and the double barrel was pretty iconic. You see that in several, hey Paul, several movies, several pictures from historical references and historical documentary books. Your stagecoach drivers had them, saloon keepers, you know, bar keepers just loved having them, because as we all know, a short double barreled or in today's world, a pump, it's going to give you a huge advantage in that close encounter dealing with somebody if you need be. I think it's still one of the most ultimate self-defense firearms out there is a shotgun, because you just got to aim close. You don't have to be precise, and then you'll do the job. Like I said here, they call it the saloon keeper's best friend. I don't know if it was really nicknamed that, but no firearm was more feared than the double-barreled shotgun. It had, unlike the precision-based Sharps, I'm just going to read this, or the revolvers of that era, the shotgun was about sheer stopping power. Single blast could end the confrontation instantly. It was favored by saloon owners, stagecoach guards, and farmers who needed a reliable way to defend their property. And that would make sense. Pretty inexpensive. You just had to kind of shoot in a general direction. You may or may not kill the enemy, but it definitely was going to do a job on them. And this is, I remember this too. Doc Holliday loved the shotgun later on in life. He was carrying one. You just got to remember, he had some issues going on. He's a gambler and a gunfighter, of course. He was known to carry one in his later years. Of course, stagecoach guards, Wells Fargo. And if you ever remember seeing some of these older photos, you'll see them a lot on these Wells Fargo stagecoaches. They relied on it because it was a deterrent to bandits from making off with their valuable cargo. The simplicity and power made it the go-to weapon for those who couldn't afford to miss their shots. And it did. To me, the shotgun today, and I've always said this, if I'm going to take it, if I had one gun that I needed to have for self-defense, it's going to be a shotgun. Of course, I'm going to choose pump. I like my pump, but yeah. All right, Steve says, hunted with a double barrel a lot. It was fun because it fit me. Yeah, I got a couple double barrels. I've got some over and unders. I really like my over and under shooting trap. Still, that design, either over under or side by side, hasn't changed a whole lot. Why change it if it doesn't need changing, right? So great guns. Here's the Schofield revolver. Now, Smith & Wesson made these. They offered it. Here's how they sold that gun. Way different than the Peacemaker. Peacemaker was your general revolver. This Schofield had a break action, which made it easier to load. No doubt about it. It was quicker to load. Could mean the difference between a lot of things. But it also had the tendency, the originals, the new ones now are really good. The new break action Schofields, I think Axe has one of them, I remember it. They're more reliable. They don't seem to not hinge. The Schofield had a tendency to not hinge and it would misfire. There was some issues with it, but when it worked great. Paul says, I use my side-by-side mounted shooting. That's right. You see a lot of that in the mounted shooting. Of course, you're seeing the 45 Colts. You're probably seeing 45 Rugers mostly. I don't remember what Paul shoots, but it seems like he's got a Ruger. You're seeing the guns that won the West. They're being used in all the mounted shooting activities and on the cowboy action shooting as well. Two different things, by the way, right, Paul? You got mounted shooting, you got cowboy action shooting competition. Anyway, Schofield, like I said, Smith & Wesson made this. They offered it. It ejected all the empty cartridges at once when you did that, when you hit it and broke open that action. It made it much quicker to reload than the Colt, and it made an attractive choice for those who needed speed over raw power. Outlaws Jesse James. That's right. Jesse James loved this gun. He favored it during high-speed heists. Reloading under pressure could mean the difference between escape or capture. It was also issued to the cavalry troops who needed efficient firepower on horseback. Schofield wasn't as famous as the Peacemaker, but for those who knew its strengths, it was a deadly advantage. And it truly was, but like I said, it had some setbacks. It had some issues. Sometimes it would not fire. And a lot of times it was due to the fact that it just didn't. When you click it back closed, it just didn't catch just right, and it didn't let that firing pin hit, which could have meant death for some of them people. So you kind of had to watch it or know what you were doing, I guess. Now, the Colt Walker. Now, this became before the Peacemaker. Of course, Colt's an iconic brand in this country. The Colt Walker was a powerhouse of a revolver designed to deliver a rifle-like firepower in a handgun. The massive weapon was created for the Texas Rangers who needed stopping power against hostile enemies. It was so large and heavy that many carried it in their saddle or on their saddle rather than in a holster. 44 caliber rounds could even bring down a horse, making it one of the most feared handguns of the time. Here's the problem, and you can imagine it was a very massive gun. If you ever get out there to the National Firearms Museum in Virginia, they've got one out there at the NRA headquarters at the National Firearms Museum. They're a beast. They really are. The weight and tendency to explode under extreme loads. Now, remember, loading wasn't the same back then as it is now. We're pretty precise. We got different powders. You can do some things. Back then, if you made the load too hot, guess what? You're going to have some problems. But it made it a bit impractical for everyday gunfighting. But when it came to the raw, devastating firepower, the Colt Walker had no equal. And if you go into the history books and read a little bit about them, they were this massive gun. They had a lot of power. A lot of people didn't want to come up against it. Now, some of the things I read about it said that because of its massive weight, yes, it had the takedown power. And you could have some pretty strong loads in there. But it wasn't great for gunfighting because it was so bulky, so heavy, that a lot of times the other person would get the drop on them. If they managed to get pulled, if they managed to get it out there, if you got hit by it, yeah, you probably weren't getting back up. But it really wasn't the choice gun for quick draws. There's no doubt about that. The Remington Model 1875 comes in number 6 out of our top 9. They call it the forgotten rival to the Peacemaker. Of course, Peacemaker we just talked about. Remington Model 1875 gained respect among those who valued precision and durability. It could fire both the 44 Remington and the 45 Colt cartridges. Well, that's a huge thing, right? It's not like today. You weren't able to pick up ammo just anywhere. Can you imagine if you had two choices? You're walking into to the only general store in town, and at least you had two choices. If they didn't have the Colts, you could get the Remingtons. So that gave them versatility, which was quite a big deal back then. It gave it more versatility than most handguns of the time. Frank James, which is Jesse's brother, he preferred the Remington for its sturdy build and reliability. It never quite reached the fame of the Colt, but many gunfighters who used it swore by its balance and its accuracy. And that's right. They were known to be very well balanced. So I have not had the chance to ever touch one or hold one of them. So maybe that needs to be on my bucket list. If anybody has seen one, we should have Gene Cox on here tonight. Gene might even have one. He likes some older firearms. Now that brings us to the old Spencer repeating rifle. It came out before the Winchester did, the lever action. Spencer repeating rifle was introduced in 1860. It was one of the first truly efficient repeating rifles. It wasn't the first one, but an efficient one, capable of firing 7 rounds in a very rapid succession. It was a revolutionary feature at the time, giving its users a major advantage over the single-shot rifles at the time, and I can imagine so. The Spencer was widely used during the Civil War and later became a favorite of the pioneers, cavalrymen, and bounty hunters. The rifle's ability to fire multiple rounds quickly changed the way battles were fought, providing speed and firepower that previous guns simply couldn't match. Think of this. You have a new rapid-fire rifle. 7 rounds, very fast, was efficient, it was quick. By the time somebody had a single shot aimed at you or trying to use it, you probably already had them gone. I mean, they maybe got one shot off. That's anything that has rapid fire, we see that today. What happened in the progression of firearms, things got better, things got more accurate, they got built better. Semi-autos changed, was a big game changer over what you'd call single shots or bolt actions. Then along came full autos. That was a big game changer, even though they had the Gatling guns before the turn of the century. Let's remember that rapid fire has been a slow progression of improvement and has been a game changer everywhere it comes into effect. Number 8, Colt Patterson. The first mass-produced revolvers, is what they say. So before the revolvers in the late 1800s came around, you had Samuel Colt's first great invention. Samuel Colt and John Browning, both of them guys, wow, the things they invented and they're still being used today. They paved the way for everything that followed. The Colt Patterson, introduced in 1836, was the first mass-produced revolver offering a rotating cylinder that allowed for 5 consecutive shots without reloading. That's huge. Again, got to remember when you had your old Colt Navies, you know, you had your old, or you even had your old ball and patch. You could load them, but they had to be loaded once you were out. These were awesome, I bet. I don't know much about them, but having a rotating cylinder that allowed for 5 consecutive shots, that had to be a big game changer in 1836. It was fragile compared to the later models, still a revolutionary firearm for its time. The Texas Rangers were among the earliest to use these firearms. They used it in skirmishes with the native tribes and the bandits along the border, I suppose. Thought it was eventually placed by more advanced designs. The Patterson was a spark that ignited a revolver era. So think about that. Another Samuel Colt invention. And it became a pretty iconic gun for its time. And then, of course, we know what happened after that. Axe says, next time you're up, you can. Let's see, what's he got? Yep, Ruger. Yeah, we'll take a look at it, Axe. I thought we had it out at one of the 2A days, which, by the way, I don't know what we got planned for that this year. I imagine we're going to do one this spring later on. We are planning to do one down at Whalen's Range as well, but we will get the date set. I'll talk with Axe and Jamie because, I mean, the 2A days are just a lot of fun. Why not celebrate a little freedom, especially on this 250th birthday of our country? The Gatling gun. Now, I've had the opportunity to shoot the Gatling gun that a good friend of mine, Bruce Jorvin, had. He used to bring it to the NRA events, and we'd sell chances on it. It's pretty cool. We set it up out here at the place. I know I got to fire it. Donnell fired it. Vance got in on that day. And then we had, I can't remember if it was Landon or Leighton. It almost seems like it was Landon, but I don't honestly remember. But we fired that right out here to the north of my place. And I'm telling you, that was pretty cool. Of course, it was a reproduction, but they do still make Gatling guns. Anyway, Gatling gun was basically the first automatic, you know, machine gun. It changed the face of warfare. It was invented in 1862. Hand-crank machine gun could fire up to 200 rounds a minute. That was unheard of at the time, by the way. It originally was designed for military use. The Gatling gun found its way into Western conflicts where it was used to protect forts, railroads, caravans from attacks. It was considered too heavy and cumbersome for a gunfighter. No kidding. Sheer firepower made it one of the most terrifying weapons of the era. The sound alone would often make attackers think twice. And when you read a little bit about it, you can hear about Indian tribes that talked about this thing, much like they did the 1866 Winchester. They called that the Yellow Boy. Well, they had nicknames for the Gatling gun. In the Civil War, it was used pretty extensively. I can't imagine facing that thing. And, you know, they got these big things that go on top, and that's how they loaded. I don't know if the old ones had the same problems. The one we were firing had a little problem once in a while where they'd kind of, I don't know, jam, for lack of a better term, as that thing is revolving and dropping them in. And we'd have to mess with that once in a while. But it didn't take long to fix it. It generally just took a shake of that entire loading cartridge up above. But pretty cool to shoot that. There was no doubt about that. You know, I just thought you guys might enjoy this. The 9 firearms that are considered to be the ones that won the West. And I thought they're all pretty cool. I have a Peacemaker, a replica. It's not a real one, I guess you could say. I do have a single action army. I guess I do have a real one of them, so it's the same thing, but I do have an actual reproduction one that I shoot. I don't have a Sharps. I got a double barrel. I know Axe has a Schofield. I'm just kind of going through these. I do not have a lot of these, actually, so I guess I got gold now, right, everybody? All right. That is our 9 guns that armed the Wild West and made the Wild West, what it was back in the day. Cops, I guess you call them, lawmen, Wyatt Earp, everybody that used to carry pretty cool ones. And it was just an interesting thing, I thought. All right, guys, we are a half hour past the beginning of the show. I know I'm not quite with it tonight, but we're going to take a quick break. And I'm going to come back, and I really want to talk about a couple races that took place in Texas. You might have heard about the primaries down there. I want to talk a little bit about that. Got some numbers on it. What we're going to see, I think it's May 26th is when they go now for the runoff elections. Cornyn is he's barely ahead of Paxton. They dumped a ton of money in there. I think Paxton had something like $8 million or something to spend. Cornyn had 80, something like that. It was just crazy numbers on that. We're going to talk a little bit about that. Herrera, though, Herrera ended up winning his. Not by a lot, but nobody achieved 50%. So when we come back from the break, we are going to talk a little bit about the primaries. I'm going to talk about a Florida bill that's going to exempt private security volunteers, a little bit different. I also am going to talk a little bit about Wyoming had a corner crossing bill that was in their legislature, and then I had the happy ending chronicle. Anyway, we will be right back after a message from our sponsors.
Lauer Auto Repair, located at 309 South Washington Street in Bismarck, North Dakota.
Give them a call at 708-258-6308.
The team of mechanics at Lauer Auto can take care of any problem your vehicle is having. And when you do business with Lauer, you can be assured you're doing business with a pro Second Amendment America First repair shop. There are plenty of other auto repair shops in the Bismarck Mandan area. But why take a chance at patronizing a shop that might not have your beliefs at heart? Make no mistake. Lauer Auto is your pro Second Amendment repair shop. When you talk to the guys at Lauer Auto, don't forget to tell them that you heard they are a sponsor of Guns and the 701 and that you appreciate their support of our pro Second Amendment, pro North Dakota live stream and podcast. That's Lauer Auto Repair, 701-258-6308.
701-258-6308.
Located 309 South Washington Street in Bismarck, North Dakota.
When you want it done right,
go where lemons go.
Kalen's Auto Service, owned and operated by Kalen and Misty Foss, lifelong locals with over 25 years experience. From modern rides to classic restorations, they can handle it all. Top quality work, fair price, and honest hometown values. Located just one block south of Highway 12 on 6th Avenue West in Lemon. Kalen's Auto Service, serving you with all your auto repair needs.
For the best gun gear for every and any situation, Little Angry Man Arms LLC has you covered. Top-notch guns from top-name brands like Winchester, Glock, Sig Sauer, and Ruger, to essential extras from Magpul, Streamlight, Hollow Sun Optics, and more. Little Angry Man Arms LLC have everything to make your shooting adventures a success. Visit LittleAngryManArms.com today and gear up for your next big hunt, competition, or home defense. Don't miss out on our exclusive deals. Little Angry Man Arms LLC, based in Trail City, South Dakota, your ultimate hunting partner.
At Horton Laser Craft, we believe in the power of personalization. Whether it's a cherished memory, a special occasion, or a unique gift, our custom laser engraving brings your vision to life. Our expert craftsmen and state-of-the-art technology ensure every piece is a work of art. From personalized decor to one-of-a-kind keepsakes, Horton Lasercraft makes every moment unforgettable. Horton Lasercraft is owned and operated by a local veteran and his wife, located near Thunderhawk, South Dakota. They provide custom laser products at a reasonable price, and their turnaround time is fast and efficient.
Custom board cutting, glassware, decanter sets, mugs, assortment. assorted stainless steel jewelry, assorted tags, decor, custom acrylic nightlights, and much, much more.
Call them up at 605-545-7535. Horton Lasercraft, where memories are engraved.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Hello to Serena Marie Funk. I didn't know we had a new one on there, but thanks for tuning in there. I found out something else. Hey, Trampas, thanks for letting me know that Plum Creek Rancher is Trampas. See, I don't know everyone, and they got these nicknames that they use, these usernames. But hey, glad to have Trampas. I heard you had a great bull sale, Trampas. I was unable to make it Friday. Some things kind of were going on around here, and it kind of worked out. So I didn't need a bull this year, so because I got two of your great bulls last year, but I heard you had a great sale, and I ended up going coyote hunting with my son. So it was a great time, him and his buddies, and we didn't get any coyotes. Wasn't a really good day. I came out later in the afternoon, but by that time, later afternoon, I'd already had to head back home. But I'm telling you, it was just great being out there with him and his buddies, just having, you know, enjoying the great outdoors. So thanks a lot. Thanks again to Lauer Auto Repair. Head on down to 309 South Washington Street, 701-258-6308. I believe I got that correct. So yeah, hey, if you need some great work done in Bismarck, North Dakota, Lauer Auto Repair, same, just get down there in South Washington. You can't miss them. They're right there, and they do a fantastic job. All right, so elections are upon us. We had a pretty big test in Texas, and I wouldn't say it was bad. I do think it's kind of what everybody has been fearing in a way. But I'll get to the results, and then we'll kind of go over the numbers and what happened there. So you had the Republican Senate primary incumbent John Cornyn. I remember Cornyn, this guy, it just amazes me that this guy keeps getting in there anyway. He basically spearheaded the effort on the Republican side, the Senate, for the Bipartisan Safer Communities Act, which was a disastrous piece of legislation that Biden wanted. I mean, that's how Cornyn is. He tries to tout himself as a big pro Second Amendment guy, and he's not. He just isn't. And I can't stand it. I cannot stand that guy. So he went up against Attorney General Ken Paxton. Ken Paxton is a true Second Amendment warrior there in the state of Texas. He's a conservative. He's MAGA. The guy, he should have trounced him, but he didn't. He's actually behind in a, looks like about 1.3%. He's behind. But remember, you had Hunt was in the race running in that primary as well. So in Texas, if nobody achieves 50%, you have a runoff. And yeah, I was right. May 26th is when that's coming up. So you take out Wesley Hunt, there was 13.5% of the vote went to him. How that'll split out, I don't know. I think Paxton might pull this off. I did hear some, I don't know. I heard some rumblings today, and I don't know if it actually is true, but it sounded like Paxton told Cornyn, if he'll support the SAFE Act, the voter registration and ID act that's running through the Senate, then he would actually drop out of the race. I think that's a horrible idea, I guess. But maybe if you need the one vote, we do need that. And this is our chance to get that in there. So I don't know. You know, politics is a dirty game and has funny bedfellows. So we'll see what happens. But if the race continues, May 26th, there'll be a runoff. Like I said, Cornyn is not a pro-Second Amendment guy. He's always been squishy on it. You never know which way he's going to go. He's even supported some of the stupidest red flag legislation in committees. It's just the guy needs to go away. Just plain and simple. Now, Paxton, who's running against him, like I said, has just been unwavering pretty much in his Second Amendment support. He is, I don't know, they've spent, I don't know if they spent their full $80 million, but he had $80 million, Cornyn did, to go up against Paxton. Some of the attack ads, if you watched them, oh, they're just brutal. They're horrible. They truly are. And, of course, it's probably going to be one of the most expensive races in the state of Texas right now. I don't know. Now that you're going to have a runoff, and if it continues, wait for it now. It's going to get even worse. It's the 23rd Congressional District, or the district as a whole. So that's where it's going to be coming out of. And you're going to be watch this race, because honestly, Paxton should be beating Cornyn. I cannot believe that this has even been that close. So the other one, though, and Jamie knows this guy. We've talked about this guy, Brandon, the AK guy, Herrera. Now, he ran last year, didn't really lose by much, or last race. I think it was a couple hundred votes. So he's coming up in again in the 23rd Congressional District. 2 years ago was when he ran. There it is right there, Tony Gonzalez. And he like said, yep, I have right, a few hundred votes. So now the congressman, who also, remember, this guy voted as well as a Republican for the same exact bipartisan safe. I call it the Unsafe Communities Act. That's what Jamie called it, too, and that's what it is. He voted for that as well. And now there's been allegations of an affair with a staffer that took her own life. She set herself on fire. Now, I don't know if that's true or not, but it seems like all these congressmen, some of these senators, they seem like they just can't hold that part of themselves at bay. A good way to put it. And we just saw, Julie Fedorchuk, she voted against releasing all this information about how different allegations, sexual affairs, things like that in Congress to be disclosed. Nope. She said, no, we're not going to do that. Why not? I think everybody should know that, but we will see where that goes. Yeah, right there, Lynette. So what happened with Julie today? She voted against the Second Amendment thing. Oh, that there. I haven't heard. So I will have to look that up. Please enlighten me. I've been kind of busy today, so I didn't get to do a lot of I prepared all this last night, so I didn't get to hear a lot of news today. Anyway, the Gonzalez thing and Herrera thing. Herrera right now, and it hasn't changed since Monday, he is up 4.3% to 41.7% ahead of Gonzalez. So that's a good thing. Herrera's great. I love this guy. He's a no BS guy. He tells it how it is. So there'll be a runoff there. I think that's going to be an expensive race, too. I don't know how much money these two guys have, but it's going to be good. I think he's got a really good chance of beating Gonzalez this time, especially with all the allegations going on. And Uvalde County, he won majorities in Uvalde County. The city itself has a pro-2A stance. But I can tell you right now, the area as a whole does not. There is some wavering there. But here's what's really interesting, and I liked how this was pointed out even in this article. Cook Political Report, actually the one who put this out. Texas 23 has always been solid Republican. Remember, that doesn't necessarily make you conservative or pro-gun. Republican does not equate conservatives. Conservatives vote Republican, but it doesn't equate it. Here, just jump in here. Jamie says, from what I've been reading, a lot of the people in Texas believe Paxton can't win the Senate seat because his baggage is too far right. Texas is red, but we're led to believe it as we're led to believe. But let's remember, Paxton has won, is it three consecutive or is it two consecutive races that have been statewide? So he has appeal statewide, and a Senate race is statewide. So you got to remember, Cornyn is putting out most of them ads if you follow the money, and they're putting it out. He's actually running ads in Texas saying, vote for me, this is Cornyn, because Paxton can't win, and then the general media picked that up nationwide. I wouldn't necessarily put a lot of credit into that, because I can tell you right now, by the numbers, Paxton has kicked butt on statewide elections. He just has. And the Senate is a statewide election. Now, big thing is are the people in Texas going to actually put a real conservative in there in Paxton, or are they going to go with squishy Cornyn? I don't know. It could be a toss-up. Steve says, I vote based issues and personal integrity. If they're a piece, and stay out of politics. Well, I'd love to do that all the time too, Steve. I really would. But unfortunately, sometimes the only two names on the ballot, we got to make a choice. I'm never going to vote for a Democrat, ever. Maybe years ago, and I did do it once. But right now, there's not one single Democrat I would ever vote for, because they continually follow the party platform, and they are anti-gun. When you get to questioning them, if they say, yeah, I love the Second Amendment, but don't vote for them because they're not Second Amendment people. All right. So we'll get back to this and go talking about the numbers here. So the GOP as a whole has a 7-point advantage in their generic ballot. And I guess what's troubling to me the most, and I guess I had seen this already, there was 54,808 votes in the GOP primary, right? There were 57,587 for Democrats. This is the problem. Oh, what is a, Steve, what's a Democrat? It's a communist. That's a pretty easy question. They are the communists, plain and simple. They've taken over the party. They're the communist Muslims. I mean, call them what you want. They're socialists. They are not true blue, love America party members anymore. They're just not. Anyway, there might be a handful out there, but as a whole, the party hates this country, and it showed in the State of the Union address. Anyway, this is more concerning to me right here. You've got an over 3,000 vote difference between the two parties. And this, I think, I know Jamie and I kind of visited about this one time too. Are people going to show up? This is a concern. Our base needs to show up. Every time the Republican base shows up, we win. But right here, you can see that we were outvoted again by almost over 3,000 votes. I had Jamie, Democrat equals anti-American. Absolutely. So I don't know what's that going to say for us, because when you look in 2024, the Republican primary had 30,000 more voters than the Democrat primary did in 2024. So there was 30,000 more votes cast by Republicans in the 2024 Republican primary primary race for the Republican candidate than there was for the Democrat one. That's concerning. And when you look at the numbers, 57,630 in 2024 for Republicans, 54,808 votes in the GOP. That is very concerning. It's very concerning. 30,000 more Democrats showed up for a grand total of 57,587 in the primary this past primary election. So that's probably the bigger problem. Are we going to see that nationwide? I don't know. I really don't. I hope not. I think we need to make sure we get out there and kick our base into high gear. I know when I worked with the Thune campaign, when we unseated Tom Daschle in South Dakota, the first time that Thune ran against Johnson, we lost. And when we went and looked at the numbers, it was kind of interesting. We did not lose in the places you'd think. We really actually kind of lost that in Pennington County. That's where Rapid City is, the Black Hills. We lost the election in Pennington County. Our voting base did not turn out that election year. Fast forward 2 years, we take on Daschle. I went down there with a lot of other people, and we worked Pennington County like nobody's probably worked it ever. We had an army of people down there. We made that voter turnout, I forget, something like increase 80-some percent over what it was the election before. They voted heavily. And, of course, we had some other things. Daschle wasn't a great candidate but anymore, because he, you know, do one thing in Washington, come back and say, no, I'm in South Dakota. I got your, you know, I got all your concerns as mine. No, that wasn't true. His vote said different. So, but that made a big, huge difference, because Pennington County had us a lot of votes, and they did then. And we completely turned that around, but that's where we lost the first election. That makes a difference, voter turnout. Get out, vote. Don't be like the Democrats and vote often, but get out there and vote. If you're not fired up, it's too bad, because the other side's always fired up. I'll give them that. The Democrat Party and their voters, they're always out there. They always turn up, and they always vote together. They just do. So now you got Katie Padilla, the way it sounds, Padilla Stout, okay, one of them hyphenated deals. She won a primary with more than 50% of the vote, so she does not have to run in the May 26th runoff. Her website's out there talking about her support for, guess what, universal background checks, which is a farce, a ban on bump stocks. Remember, universal background checks means if you, me, Jamie, if you and I get together and decide we're going to sell a gun, guess what? They want us to go do an FFL and do a background check. It's just insane. Axe, if you wanted to sell me a gun today, you can't do it. If anyone wanted to sell a gun, if we want to have a private transaction, nope, they want you to go through a background check. That's what universal background checks really mean. They always say it's for gun shows, but it's not. The ban on bump stocks, again, and red flag laws. Red flag laws are nothing but basically your rights being infringed on, saying that you're guilty before you prove yourself innocent. That is what a red flag law is. Or some states call them yellow flag laws. The gun control groups, they're already coming out saying that they're going to be spending a lot of money backing her in the November election that she's going to be in now. They got Texas. This is a Texas Senate race where Democrat James Tallarico. Now, I know that everyone kind of heard about this. He was running against Jasmine Crockett. Not even close. He beat her pretty hands down. His website says he supports universal background checks, gun storage mandates, raising the age to purchase. By the way, he wants that to 21 for all firearms. Semi-automatic rifles as well being banned. Of course, raising the age to purchase semi-automatic rifles as well, with certain military-style features and high-capacity magazines. There we go. The same old banter, the same old failed policies. They don't work. They never will. They only affect those of us who are law-abiding. This guy also, he's the guy that got up there and talked about, went to a Presbyterian seminary school, I guess. So he thinks he's a Bible expert too, trying to say that, you know, all God's children are made in his image. Yes, they are. Everyone's made in God's image, right? It's right there in Genesis. Not disputing that. But it doesn't, and then he said, but that makes God non-binary. No, God is not a human, for starters. God is an effervescent image. He is the God. He is not human. He's not man. Only Jesus was man. Maybe old Tallarico should go ahead and take a look at that. But there's only one man and one woman. That is what was created. They were created in God's image, plain and simple, but he was trying to twist biblical ideology and biblical teachings that are fact. But it doesn't surprise me that people would buy into that. Most people probably haven't read the Bible. They don't practice it anymore. And they, especially on the left side, I'm sure you can make them believe anything. And they'll take scripture and then cherry pick verses to make it fit their narrative. And it's very frustrating to see somebody do that. It means they're a false prophet, call them. They're probably idol worshipers. Who knows? But this guy, he's actually worse than your run of the average. At least we knew Jasmine Crockett was just crazy. This guy, he's actually kind of dangerous. Anyway, he's big-time anti-gun. He's going to be running in that Senate race, and he'll either face Cornyn or he's going to face Paxton. To me, that choice would be clear. But if the Republicans don't vote, you could see that seat go to this guy because he's smooth, man. I'm telling you, you listen to him talk. He's not an idiot, okay? So they need to take him serious. And that says, comments are so hard to see. Can you change the font color? I noticed that too tonight, guys, and I can't tell you why they're that way. That's something new since I've been on here. Tell you what, when we go to break, I will work on seeing if I can make that change. But I honestly can't tell you why they even went to that. The whole format here on Restream, I don't know if you noticed it, Jamie, but there's a new format here, and they changed some things around. I don't necessarily like it, but I don't have a lot of influence on that. I can send them something. A lot of times they respond. So we're coming up here about 10-2. You got any comments on that? I think you're going to see some issues there in Texas. It's going to be a race to watch here. May 26th is going to be a big one. So I think you guys want to watch that because I think Herrera's got a really good chance to win that. And then I think he'll go on to win that seat as a whole. But when it comes to, you know, I don't know. We'll see. I hope he does. But the Senate seat's going to be interesting. You got Cornyn and Paxton. If our base doesn't get out and vote, I believe that seat, if Paxton is the candidate, then will be a gain for the Democrats, unfortunately. And it won't be because of Paxton and as a whole, as far as I'm concerned. I think it'll be a numbers game of people not voting. again, very important. And I've heard already other, even in our own state, Republicans like, oh, I don't know if I'm going to vote this year. I'm not going to vote in the primary. And let's face it, Trump was the big influence in 2024. He was on the ballot. A lot of people came out and voted. So then they went ahead and just hammered it, and they voted up. They voted up and down Republican on a lot of their tickets. So that's probably the biggest thing. So I'm going to run another deal. I'm going to, let's see here. Jamie says, I know it's new before. My background is dark in color, so it wasn't a problem for me. Yeah, I'll see what I can do. If I need to, I'll change the background. It is kind of hard. I know it's to read. So let's take a big break. I'm going to run the big one so that I got a little time to look at this. We'll be right back. And I'm going to come and talk about a Florida bill that is kind of interesting. I kind of like it. We got the Wyoming corner crossing. I'd love to hear your comments on that. I know what my feelings are on it. And then our happy ending chronicle. So we'll be right back after a little run from our sponsors here, guys.
Lauer Auto Repair, located at 309 South Washington Street in Bismarck, North Dakota.
Give them a call at 701-258-6308.
The team of mechanics at Lauer Auto can take care of any problem your vehicle is having. And when you do business with Lauer, you can be assured you're doing business with a pro Second Amendment America First repair shop. There are plenty of other auto repair shops in the Bismarck Mandan area. But why take a chance at patronizing a shop that might not have your beliefs at heart? Make no mistake.
Make no mistake.
Lauer Auto is your pro Second Amendment repair shop. When you talk to the guys at Lauer Auto, don't forget to tell them that you heard they are a sponsor of Guns and the 701 and that you appreciate their support of our pro Second Amendment, pro North Dakota live stream and podcast. That's Lauer Auto Repair, 701-258-6308.
701-258-6308.
Located 309 South Washington Street in Bismarck, North Dakota.
When you want it done right,
go where lemons go.
Kalen's Auto Service, owned and operated by Kalen and Misty Foss, lifelong locals with over 25 years experience. From modern rides to classic restorations, they can handle it all. Top quality work, fair price, and honest hometown values. Located just one block south of Highway 12 on 6th Avenue West in Lemon. Kalen's Auto Service, serving you with all your auto repair needs.
For the best gun gear for every and any situation, Little Angry Man Arms LLC has you covered. Top-notch guns from top-name brands like Winchester, Glock, Sig Sauer, and Ruger, to essential extras from Magpul, Streamlight, Hollow Sun Optics, and more. Little Angry Man Arms LLC have everything to make your shooting adventures a success. Visit LittleAngryManArms.com today and gear up for your next big hunt, competition, or home defense. Don't miss out on our exclusive deals. Little Angry Man Arms LLC, based in Trail City, South Dakota, your ultimate hunting partner.
At Horton Laser Craft, we believe in the power of personalization. Whether it's a cherished memory, a special occasion, or a unique gift, our custom laser engraving brings your vision to life. Our expert craftsmen and state-of-the-art technology ensure every piece is a work of art. From personalized decor to one-of-a-kind keepsakes, Horton Lasercraft makes every moment unforgettable. Horton Lasercraft is owned and operated by a local veteran and his wife, located near Thunderhawk, South Dakota. They provide custom laser products at a reasonable price, and their turnaround time is fast and efficient.
Custom board cutting, glassware, decanter sets, mugs, assorted stainless steel jewelry, assorted tags, decor, custom acrylic nightlights, and much, much more.
Call them up at 605-545-7535. Horton Lasercraft, where memories are engraved.
All right, we're back, and evidently I was not able to fix that. I'm going to try a couple things here. I don't know if that will help. No, that didn't help either. So I guess I'm going to go try to change my background, because you guys are right. It's hard to read that. So let's see if we can just do this. Still isn't the best, is it? Yeah, I don't know what's going on with it. I really, truly don't. I know they changed things, so I really can't tell you what happened as to what their thinking was on that. And I got no way to change it so that it's not what I call a clear background. So I'll do some working on that. Maybe I can get it changed, find out something by next weekend, or next week. So I don't know. But thanks. Thanks again, guys. I will work on it. It's a little easier here. I just turned the background off altogether. So we'll see if that helps out a little bit. All right. So before we went to the break, I told everybody that I was going to go ahead and talk to you about the Florida bill. So I do like this. It exempts church security from private security regulations. I didn't realize they had such stringent private security regs in Florida. Probably something else they should work on. So they're real close to doing this. This was brought forth essentially by churches in general, because they want to have voluntary armed security in their churches, which means anybody that basically is a church member is probably serving in that capacity. I know that we've discussed that at our own church, actually. It will now exempt them from all the requirements. If this bill passes, it sounds like a great support for it, from all of the requirements of Florida statutes that regulate members of private security services, private investigations, and security and repossession services that are regulated under Chapter 493. And what they're asking it to do is that a voluntary church security member who has a concealed carry permit now won't need to go through all the regulation to become, quote, a private security member. H95 cleared the House. It was added to the House second reading. I went and looked at their calendar. It passed on February 10th. No movement on it so far. It looks like it's scheduled to probably hit the House floor soon. Senate Bill 52, which is like the sister bill to it, passed the Senate 39-0. In the House, it passed it unanimously out of the committee. They're just waiting on that House floor vote, and then they'll see where the two bills come out. They're poised to pass them both. They're both similar. The Senate version is slightly broader, covers multiple houses of worship. Senate Bill 52 has passed the Senate, like I said, committee and the Senate unanimously. You guys ever notice that a lot of these other states, they can get unanimous votes on the floor of their Senate and or House, especially on 2A bills and other things, but we can't get it accomplished in North Dakota. So, you know, there's Democrats in there. Those Democrats evidently are pro-gun, because you got a 39-0 vote in the Senate in Florida for this bill. So, yeah. The House Bill 95, it passed the House committees unanimously. They're looking to schedule it. There were a few members absent. I'm just kind of looking over it. Here's what it says here. Any person on a voluntary basis provides armed security services on the premises of a church or a denominational organization having an established physical place of worship in the state at which nonprofit religious service activities are regularly conducted. They can do this and be exempt if the person providing them armed security holds a valid license to carry a concealed weapon or firearm issued. The security services are provided exclusively on the premise of the church or the denominational organization, including any property owned or leased by the church or denominational organization for worship, education, or religious activities. C. The person providing the armed security services did not receive any compensation for these services. For the purposes of this paragraph, the term compensation does not, though, include reimbursement for reasonable expenses actually incurred and related to the cost of training or the cost of equipment necessary for providing that service. So that's what they're proposing to make the change of. They did some polling. It appears popular, which is great. It's expected to pass, and it sounds like DeSantis is going to sign it if it hits his desk. That will make that law, make it law on July 1st, 2026. In 2021, Governor DeSantis signed House Bill HB 259. It allowed people with concealed carry permits to carry on church property unless the religious institution has a policy explicitly forbidding the carry of concealed firearms. The previous law restored the choice of the institutions instead of preemptively forbidding it and the carrying of concealed weapons on the grounds of churches unless the administration of the religious institution specifically allowed it. So I remember when that was kind of rolling through, and it was good to see, I guess I don't understand why any church would tell you no, honestly. Our rights are God-given. They're established that way. They've been proclaimed that way in our founding documents. So I don't know why a church would be afraid of one of their own parishioners, because let's face it, it's like any other, I guess, worry. The law-abiding person who's carrying concealed or openly, either one, they're not your problem. They're the law-abiding person. The person who's meaning to do harm, he runs in there, he or she, they run in there. They don't care about your rules. They don't care about the law. Them, the fact that they're coming in to kill you is already breaking the law, you know, murder. They don't care. So why on earth wouldn't you want to have your parishioners, if they want to carry and they feel comfortable defending, let them do it. That's what we do in our church. I guarantee you on any given Sunday at my church, you come in there and you think you're going to commit a mass shooting, I don't think you're going to get far. There's a lot of people carry there. We only had a couple of people that were a little, they didn't like the fact that some of us were carrying openly. I don't. I carry concealed when I'm there. And they asked that everyone would carry concealed, I guess, for the sake of being in fellowship. We went along with that, but we did not pass anything. I'm on the console, and I said, well, I'm out. I will never vote for anything that restricts. So I'm a no vote on it, and I was not alone in that. So we do not have policy. I know that they asked some of the guys that were open carrying, and they said, yeah, no problem. So, you know, it was their choice. They didn't have to. I got a copy of the bill. It's just basically a 2-page bill. Most of it just changes that wording that I just read to you. So I like this idea. I hope to get it done. I'm going to be watching this bill for sure. I do love how the writer who wrote this particular article, armed volunteers have served as church security since colonial days. During the colonial period, several colonies required church members to bring their weapons to church service. So I did a little looking into that, and yeah, that was true. So before the Revolutionary War, of course, we were wards of Britain. And, you know, the Church of Britain or the Church of Europe, I forget what they called it, but you did not have freedom of religion. So you had a lot of people that were wanting that freedom as well. So especially at those churches when they were holding services, because you had British troops on the ground here, they were required to bring their firearms to ward off any kind of an attack or any kind of anything like that. I didn't realize that. And then on top of it, they just wanted you to carry for any kind of a threat. And they said, hey, you know, bring your firearms. And they'd have them in the church building, and not a bad idea. I think it's a great idea. So this is not something that's new. As far as it goes, it actually goes under Bruin, because any kind of historical or common use, well, right there, you can prove that in church buildings, our colonists were carrying their firearms and even requiring that at some of them to be at their house of worship when they were there. So again, here's Bruin being, if it ever went to court, I don't think, If you had an issue like that in any kind of a state, any kind of a municipality, I think you could take that to court, and I think you could work that up the chain. It'd be expensive, but if it got to the Supreme Court, I think it would be found that, again, under Bruin, it is a historical and common use of the firearm. Therefore, it would be struck down if somebody was trying to forbid you from carrying in a church, or a state was forbidding it, or a county, whatever it might be. Just so everybody knows, I think Bruin would be very, very relevant, particularly in a case like that. So that's my take on it. Yeah. Hey, Leon, good to have you in, man. Are you going to make it on time tomorrow? I know you had a little incident last week. But, again, thanks to you guys, both Jamie and Leon here the last couple of weeks, for filling in for me on Fridays and on my Thursday show. I have too many things going on right now, and they had to be addressed. So. Alrighty, so here's one I really liked out of Wyoming. I imagine we're going to see this, some kind of bill taking place in North Dakota, because the backcountry homos are pushing this big time. I do not like that. They are not a friend of the hunter most of the time. And they're the kind of people that get behind some of these bills. Now, this one that kind of sounds like in Wyoming, they probably weren't for it, but not for the reasons that you and I may or may not be for it. So right now, though, if you've been watching this, House Bill 19 on Monday died on the floor in the Wyoming Senate. What this was about was the whether corner crossing is legal in between public access lands, I guess you'd call them. And would you have to face a trespassing charge if you do it? It was a big issue in Montana. It's becoming a big issue everywhere. What House Bill 19 would have done, it would have clarified the Wyoming statute as to what the federal court established that crossing corners between parcels of public land on, let's say, public land adjacent to private property isn't trespassing. And that was a 10th Circuit Court decision, but that involved federal land. They did not specifically address it as a whole. If you read the entire thing, it was specific to the federal land. If I remember right, let me look, maybe it's in here. That happened in Carbon County out there, and it was between Elk Mountain Ranch owner Fred Elshman's land, and it's technically held by the Iron Bar Holdings LLC Corporation. They initially filed criminal trespass complaints against four hunters, out-of-state hunters, and they were trying to cross one federal land to the other on a corner. Now, I don't know what you guys think about corner crossing. It's an interesting deal because, let's face it, you got two sheets of paper here, which would be two parcels of land, and they're here. I would say if you can get from this one, you probably haven't trespassed, even if I own the other two that meet in that corner, okay? I guess to me, I probably would not call that trespassing. Now, if you had to step onto my land, we got a different problem. Now it's trespass. And some of these, I've read some of these proposed bills coming out across the United States, and this, they even want to allow a person to step on that private land to get to that corner. Nope, I'm not for that. If you can get there from the one corner to the other and not step foot or have anything on the private land, fine. But when private land is just that, private. Unfortunately, North Dakota in 2019 struck down that all land would be considered posted in this state. And that did not help anything. And some other things that have been happening have not helped that relationship with landowners. But private land should never be accessible, not by anybody unless you got permission. Plain and simple. That's why it's private. It's the way it is in towns. Ordinances are actually written within towns and municipalities that bar anybody from coming onto your private property, and you can be held accountable, jailed, and or fined. So why is it any different for your lot than it is for my place or anybody's place out in the country? It's a very frustrating issue to me. But on the corner thing, if you can cross, as far as I'm concerned, from one piece of public to the other, I don't have an issue with it. But you can't touch the other adjacent pieces. That's private land. Private is private, whether it's a one square inch or whether it's 160 acres. It's just that simple, or 3,000. Private is private. So that brings me back to this bill. And like I said, I welcome the comments on this, guys. Throw them in there, because if you disagree, fine. You may, but make your case. But right now, I do believe that if you can cross without touching the private property, it's okay. So now here's where it goes. A lot of hunters to access hunting ground, public access lands, they do like to do this. It does make some property owners mad. It generates a few what you'd call trespass complaints and or reports to law enforcement. So I found it interesting that in Wyoming, they had a guy by the name of Alan Thompson. He was there to testify on this bill. And he was asked a question about how many complaints. He says, corner crossing complaints don't seem to be a persistent problem for us. He's the executive director of Wyoming's Association of Sheriffs and Chiefs of Police. He says it comes down to a fact that there just aren't that many property corners in Wyoming either that would apply to this. And when this comes up around here, I'm going to do some research as to how many parcels of land will that really affect in the state of North Dakota. I mean, in all reality, how many times would there be this corner crossing issue, and how many complaints have either the sheriffs or any other officers, game wardens mostly, have they had complaints? I'd really like to know that. I really want to know that thought on that. Leon says, what's your thoughts on bills proposed to end concealed carry permit requirement introduced in Michigan specifically? Do you think that the constitutional carry permits are constitutional? So, Leon, I haven't read that bill. I just saw it as well. But I love the fact of constitutional carry. No permit should be needed to carry your firearm, concealed or otherwise. State of South Dakota's had open carry for longer than I've been alive. And, of course, you know, now we have constitutional carry to the south of us, as do we do in North Dakota. But the one in South Dakota is actually better. I actually helped write that bill with a senator down there at the time. So Stace Nelson, he was a big advocate. And when he was in the Senate, we wrote that bill, and it didn't finally pass. And Christy Noem, who just changed positions today, she actually signed that bill. So as far as 2A, she was great. I guess I got to go read that Michigan bill, and maybe if somebody's got some extra information on it. I have not read it yet, but I do think that concealed carry should not require a permit ever. You should be able to carry concealed or open without a permit. You should not need a permit, plain and simple. Now, Jamie says, private land is private. Stay off people's land when you corner cross, and it shouldn't be a problem. Yeah, that's my thought too, Jamie. If you're not on my land or you're not on a person's private land, then by all means. So anyway, I'll get back to this. This guy went on to say, he goes, the 10th Circuit Court decision seems to have set precedent for now. And that happened in 2025, guys. And that was, again, against four out-of-state hunters accused of trespassing in Carbon County in 2021. They found that they were not guilty of them charges. And it was, when you read the decision on federal land, and that's now what has caused the little murkiness on this now right now. The plaintiffs actually tried to take it to the Supreme Court. The circuit court upheld it after they appealed it. Plaintiffs then went to the Supreme Court, who refused to hear the case, which I know, honestly, I don't think that is a case for the Supreme Court. That belongs down in your circuit courts, and that's where it should be handled. They did have some amendments that were added to this, clarifying things as such as setting foot on private land or damaging private property were added to this bill. And that became an issue, which actually made some hunters then be against the bill, because if you go read it, yeah, that could have been an issue. They were talking to this other guy, and I'm not going to, you can imagine he's with my favorite group there, but they were asking his opinion. He says, my opinion, it made the corner crossing more unclear. I agree with him on that. When you read what they added for amendments, it actually made it worse, I thought as well. So corner crossing is already a common practice among hunters before the Iron Bar holdings. That case blew up and just made it more, public, probably true. If it was me, I'd be like, okay, 10th Circuit says you can do this. Again, the problem is it applied to federal land, two pieces of federal land that were touching in the corner. So when that decision come out, that was the decision, that there was no trespassing to the federal land between corners. Now, as always, they should have probably went farther, but they didn't. Now, does that go for things like public school lands, trust lands, state-owned lands, any kind of land that's publicly held as public access, does that include them? It isn't clear. And I imagine we're going to start seeing court cases on that. And that's what some of these bills are about. So now they were kind of going through this whole thing talking about the deal out in Montana. And this did, I remember this. I've been out there hunting in Montana. And in Montana, you can enter a river. Like when I was out there duck hunting, if you saw the beginning of this intro, that's me and my buddy Johnson out there duck hunting. You can enter that. at that time, you could not step foot onto, you could float the river. If there was a sandbar in the river, you could go there. But you could not go onto the bank of the river. That was private property. Well, Montana changed that, and they have said that now, if you're in a stream, the access is up to the natural high water marks on the bank. South Dakota's got the same thing. You can enter anywhere from a public access point, that being a culvert crossing, I guess you could say. If there's a road there, you could access from a road period, because most of them have easements, and you can enter onto it up to the high water mark. Well, in South Dakota, the high water mark is where the last time it went up to, meaning wherever it flooded. So that can change, and it has, and it can even grow. The last time we had all that moisture down here, and it pretty much filled up Shade Hill, it changed the high water mark on the Grand River forever. So, and you can tell where that is. Just look for where the logs are. But anyway, so Montana, now you can do that. But you could not do that when I was out there. So when we were out there, we parked the boat, actually, that we took up the stream, and we parked that on a sandbar, and then we built our blind kind of in the middle of that river, and that's where we hunted. So that has changed. I ain't got a problem with that. I really don't. Even if I had river bottom, I wouldn't want them coming up into my pasture, but I guess, I don't know. That high water mark is an interesting determination. I guess Montana, they did that. It's not, and from what I'm looking here in the article, there really isn't that big of trouble. The corner crossing thing doesn't seem like it's that relevant, except in a few instances, and it boils down to like those four guys. If you read that whole thing and the whole decision in the court case, they were pissed off because they couldn't get to this piece of federal land by any other means. They had a ladder that they built that went up and over, and it touched the federal land and the federal land. They had to come in from a long ways away, which that's fine. That's up to them. And it sounded like it was pretty good hunting land. So it causes issues when something like that happens. But again, I think they did the right thing. If they did not cross the private land or touch it, then so be it. Now, there is the other thing. If a fence gets broke in the process, then what? But that's all things are going to have to be, they're going to be hammered out. It's just going to have to be hammered out. Now, some of the agricultural advocates, and this is where they start talking about it, and that's their contention. 10th Circuit decision should have settled it, but it only relates to federal lands. And so as far as they're concerned, that's the law of the land, but some of these guys think it only pertains to the federal lands, and that's kind of how I read it too. And they mentioned the same things here. State trust lands, lands controlled by county or municipalities, or any other kind of public land that isn't federal. This is the guy, Jim Magana. He's executive vice president of the Wyoming Stock Growers Association. They also chimed in. We had Wyoming Farm Bureau. Kelly Carpenter made a statement that more clarity is regarding the legal parameters of stepping over or stepping on private property at the pinpoint where the corners are met is needed. But the legal circumstances, we recognize that the decision from the 10th Circuit as being the governing decision as it pertains to certain situations. I guess that's a way to answer the question without answering it. The Iron Bar Holdings case involved federal land at a marked corner in a situation where hunters never actually set foot on private property. Therefore, we need to have the broader question of corner crossings settled by ranchers, public land users, and law enforcement working together. The stakeholder-driven process, that's the Wyoming way, gets everybody to sit down at the table together. Could be. Again, I imagine you're going to end up having either a bill passed that will set that and set the definition, or there'll be a court case that will more so define that. That'll be the two avenues. They were asked if there'd be a bill that comes in 2027, and the two people that sponsored it, Provenza and Brian, told the reporter that they're not certain if they'll bring another bill in 2027. One guy said, I'm not even sure. He says, I got to get reelected in November. Otherwise, I guess it's a moot point, is pretty much what he said. But I'm committed to protecting public land access. So as we see any issues come, I will work hard to make sure that people have the freedom to access their public land, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, public versus private land issues never going away. I think everyone knows my contention about public lands. The only federal lands that should be owned, and I've never wavered on this, is the 10 by 10 square miles set out by our Constitution, post office, and forts that are afforded to the federal government. Otherwise, they shouldn't own any land, period. At best, it should be in the state's hands or even the county's. There's nothing barring them constitutionally from owning land. Federal lands should be turned over to the states or to the counties of their respective areas where they're at. There should be no federal lands. National parks were created under the Antiquities Act, and it was kind of an abuse of that. You know, again, to me, they'd be better run state by the state, depending on the state they're in, though. So that's always been my position. And, you know, I've got two allotments that go with this place based on base acres that we own. And I wish they'd just sell them to me. I mean, I manage them better than they ever have, especially after I came back and I took over. They were letting the guy that was leasing my place completely run them, as far as I'm concerned, down to the nub, and they never had nothing on them. Unless there's a drought, the public ground that I have a permanent allotment with our place, it always looks better than most of them around me, managed by some neighbors that have the same types of ground. I just don't run that many head on them. So I don't like seeing them looking like a green on a golf course. They should never look like that, except in a drought year, it can happen. It just, nothing grows. So I guess, but I wish they'd just sell them. I mean, you're talking 80 acres up on my north place, and then you got two quarters. So 320 plus 80. Come on. There's no reason. Just, I can do a way better job on them. And then I'd do some different improvements on them, but I will never do them as long as I don't own them. Why on earth would I do that? I'm not going to stick a bunch of money in the land I don't own. It's that simple. So, tell you what, 8:25, we're going to go ahead and take another quick break. I'm going to come back with a happy ending of the evening and the week, and then we're going to call it an evening, call it a wrap. So stick with us here. Thanks to all our great sponsors, especially Lauer Auto Repair. They've been with us since the very beginning. So thanks, Axe and Lynn Lynette, for supporting this show. It's coming up on 3 years here, so imagine that, huh? Anyway, thanks to all of them who've been supporting us, and we will be right back after a great message from our sponsors.
Lauer Auto Repair, located at 309 South Washington Street in Bismarck, North Dakota.
Give them a call at 701-258-6308.
The team of mechanics at Lauer Auto can take care of any problem your vehicle is having. And when you do business with Lauer, you can be assured you're doing business with a pro Second Amendment America First repair shop. There are plenty of other auto repair shops in the Bismarck-Mandan area. But why take a chance at patronizing a shop that might not have your beliefs at heart? Make no mistake. Lauer Auto is your pro Second Amendment repair shop. When you talk to the guys at Lauer Auto, don't forget to tell them that you heard they are a sponsor of Guns and the 701 and that you appreciate their support of our pro Second Amendment, pro North Dakota live stream and podcast. That's Lauer Auto Repair, 701-258-6308.
701-258-6308.
Located 309 South Washington Street in Bismarck, North Dakota.
When you want it done right,
go where lemons go.
Kalen's Auto Service, owned and operated by Kalen and Misty Foss, lifelong locals with over 25 years experience. From modern rides to classic restorations, they can handle it all. Top quality work, fair price, and honest hometown values. Located just one block south of Highway 12 on 6th Avenue West in Lemon. Kalen's Auto Service, serving you with all your auto repair needs.
All right, we are back for the last segment here, and just another quick reminder, tomorrow morning, 7:15 a.m., KFYR 550. Mitchell in the morning. Me and Todd Mitchell will sit down. And you know what? I think I'll talk a little bit about that Michigan build. Maybe be something else I can add to what I've already got put together for tomorrow. But yeah, tune in there. Of course, 7:15 Mountain, 8:15 Central. Blackbeard Logic, 5 o'clock p.m. Mountain Standard Time, 6 o'clock Central. You don't want to miss another great episode. Leon Francis hosts that show, and he does a great job. If you haven't checked his Christ OS, check those out as well. Leon, what a fantastic job with those. I love watching those, and you do a very good job on that, my friend. And, yeah, so go watch them both because they're great. And Leon always has some great guests on there. And, of course, the Sunday Sportsman's Devotion, Vance Bishop, he comes live from Alabama every Sunday and has just a great show there tying in hunting and shooting along with devotionals. And I don't know, I'm usually up that morning, you know, pretty early. So I might just have to pop on there and say hi to him and just participate in that because he does a great job right there. And of course, right now, every Thursday, we are doing GAT 701 right here, 7 o'clock p.m. Mountain Time, 8 o'clock in the Central Time Zone. So you want to tune in for that. So I went over here and just quickly skimmed this, Liam. It would make Michigan the 30th constitutional carry state in the United States. So 30 of the 50 would become constitutional carry state. That's been a very long process. I kind of went and looked at it. It's going to eliminate what they called their concealed pistol license, which is the requirement for concealed carry in there. And it's the same arguments. You know, those that are supporting it, it's a constitutional right. It's going to remove unnecessary government barriers. It just, there's no means for it. It also will let you still apply for one, much like what we have here in North Dakota and South Dakota. You can still get one, and they've got the enhanced and non-enhanced, and I think they call it South Dakota, and then the class one or three. They got these different classes. One of it meets different reciprocity requirements in other states because it's got a photo ID on it. It eliminates the need to do a NICS 4473. So there is some good things about that. And, of course, the other side of it, or as we call them, commie anti-American Democrats, for the most part, are saying that it's going to put law-abiding citizens at risk. Really? Kidding me? They think that's going to put them at risk. We got 29 other states right now that allow this. It didn't become the Wild West. It didn't put anybody at risk. If anything, it probably saved lives. How many lives did it actually save by having constitutional carry in the other 29 states? I bet I can find that number. Maybe I'll look for it before tomorrow morning. But it's not going to create the problems that the other side is telling us, and it's Democrats. And you're right, Jamie. I bet you old Gretchen ain't going to sign it. I would be shocked if she'd sign it. The only way is if they probably have a veto-proof legislature. We shall see what happens, but at least they're talking about it. Constitutional carry does not equate more deaths of innocent people, plain and simple. We're not the most of people carrying that way are law-abiding people. In fact, I don't really know of anybody that wouldn't be. I've never heard of it. They're not the people committing the crime. And again, criminals are criminals by definition because they break the law. So they don't care whether you can carry or can't carry. They really don't care. They're going to do what they want to do. So I just think it'd be nice to see a 30th state being a constitutional carry state. But we shall see. I'm going to go look it up. I just kind of looked at a quick overview of it. And I don't know. We will find out, though. I'm really anxious to go and read the entire bill here. And I'll probably try to talk about it tomorrow, most likely. And I think, if I remember right, I've seen that Senator or Representative Miller, I can't remember, I just saw just a quick glance of it. Sounds like there's a bill being produced being introduced for true constitutional carry in, you know, countrywide. We've been working on that for a long time, even when I was still at the NRA, and I've been retired since 2016. So 10 years ago, they were working on this. Still don't have it. I don't know. The margins are probably slim between, you know, in the House. I think they could get that through there. The Senate, I don't know. You know, nuke the filibuster. Get it done. Come on, Thune, get that done. Because as soon as the Democrats take control, whenever that might be, they're going to nuke it and they're going to push through an agenda like we've never seen. And hopefully, God willing, we have a decent president or we have a house that can stop them, because if they ever get control again, total control, this country will be destroyed. You know their agenda. You know what they're going to do. And I don't think we'll survive. But nuke it. Push through the ideology or push through our agenda and get these things done. We've got 3 years, guys. Really only two. We need to get some stuff done. The Senate is where things go to die on Thune's watch. Get rid of it. Get it done. All right. So with that, we're going to do our happy ending chronicle. This one comes out of Yellow Springs, West Virginia, Hampshire County, in fact. And it involves probably a domestic dispute. There is not a lot of stuff out there yet on it. I figured there'd be more, but I thought I'd still bring it forth because it proves some points here. So the Hampshire County 911 dispatch, the sheriff's office, of course, went forth and responded to this. And, of course, there was a happy ending that took place. It appears to be domestic related, as the investigators at the county sheriff's office disclosed. They also said children were inside the residence at the time of the shooting and confirmed that no juveniles were physically injured. Witnesses, though, say that the reported shooter may have been, witnesses say that the reported shooter, the person that did the shooting in self-defense, were cooperating with investigators. This was also then affirmed by the Hampshire County Sheriff's Office. Here's what's interesting. The Sheriff's Office also confirmed and put out a release that said that the man who was killed was not even supposed to be at the residence at this time in Hampshire County. They said that it was determined under a bond stipulation when he was released, the now deceased male was prohibited from being at the home. So if you find the news report on this, when I looked, and I said, not a ton of information. He was trying to force entry into this home. It didn't say he's either got to be a boyfriend or the dad. I really don't know, or an ex-spouse. That's kind of what it sounded like, but that information had not been released. I don't know if the guy had a record, but he was released on bond is what happened. So he got arrested at one point and was out on bond, went back. They say they are aware of the prior law enforcement responses to the residents, which that kind of was confirmed, like I said, in that news report. But I like what it does. This actually, and the nice thing is that this guy went in there. He was threatening. She ventilated him, the gal that was still there, and he's no longer here. So he is not going to cause any more problems. It's sad if that is the children's dad that had to happen. But the guy sounded like he was pretty unhinged. But I think it brings up a really good, example of why a court order don't mean anything, right? And we were just talking about the other side. They want to do red flag laws. They want to do this. They want to do great. You know what, though? They don't mean anything to a person who's determined to cause harm. If he has that evil in his heart, if he has problems in his head, mental instability, obviously, where they're planning to do harm, a piece of paper, which was a restraining order as part of their bond stipulation, and you couldn't be at this residence, didn't matter that guy did it. He went in there basically guns a-blazing. I don't know physically if he had a gun, but he definitely was threatening enough that he got ventilated, and no arrests have been made on the shooter, which, according to the one news article I've seen, is the female of the home. So I think it's a great example of how a court or the law enforcement can say, nope, you can't be here, but physically that paper does nothing. You can't stop these people if they're determined, and they will show up, and who knows how things go down. In this particular situation, this person was armed, was able to defend themselves, and they were able to eliminate a threat that with deadly force. And it's a good thing that she probably had it the way it sounded. So that is my happy ending chronicle. I think it was another good one. It also showed examples of why we need to have stand your ground laws. We've got a pretty good one here now in North Dakota. Done a little tweaking last session. It could use a little more, but for the most part, it's pretty good. South Dakota's is great. Wyoming's is fantastic. So with that, everybody, again, don't forget, we got Guns and Seven Home Network shows coming up again tomorrow morning. Tune in KFYR 550 AM, Mitchell in the Morning with Todd Mitchell. And I'm going to bring up this Michigan thing. I'm going to definitely bring that one up. I got a few other things I want to bring up on that show. And at 7:15 a.m. Mountain, 8:15 Central. Then Friday night, tomorrow night, tune in to Blackbeard Logic with Leon Francis. I don't know who Leon's got coming on, but I'm sure he'll do a little promo. He usually does as well. Always has a great show out there on the eastern edge behind enemy lines. So you're going to want to tune in for that as well. And Sunday, Sportsman's Devotion, 7 o'clock a.m. Mountain, 8 p.m. Central with Pastor Vance Bishop. Ties in hunting and shooting and just a whole bunch of things in with the Word of Christ and the Word of God. So you're definitely going to want to tune in and see how he wraps that up each and every Sunday morning. And like I said, I might pop in there and just say hi to Vance and join in because I really enjoy that show as well. So tune in, everybody, every single Wednesday night normally. But right now, it's Thursday nights. I'm thinking about going there permanently. We shall see. But Thursday nights, at least through Lent, so the end of the month. And that's going to be at 7 p.m. Mountain, 8 p.m. Central. And we'll bring you another great episode of Guns in the 701 right here every single week at the same time on any platform. You go give us a like, subscribe. It helps bring those algorithms up. I see we've been gaining over on the YouTube channel. We appreciate everybody do that. And one thing I also want to remind everybody, do not forget to go out and support our sponsors. Lauer Auto Repair, Kalen's Auto Service, Little Anger Man Arm. By the way, he was at the gun show in Lemon. I did not make it there because I won't go to a gun show that does not let you carry. Are you kidding me? And that was one of those instances. Dakota Territory Gun Collectors is doing the same thing. I am trying to get their chairman on to see if he wants to defend that policy, but he does not seem interested right now. So we'll see. We may get him on. We may not. Anyway, and then, of course, Horton Lasercraft. Hey, they're the fine people, veteran known. There, we'll put it over here so you can see it. Right there. These things are great. We've got those new sweatshirts as well right here. Go order those. Those are fantastic as well on the website, gunsandsettling.com. And, yeah, I've been selling a few of them. So thanks for all the support. Thanks to the subscribers that went ahead and made that monthly commitment. Scan that QR code over here. I guess over there. Go scan that, and we appreciate all of the support. Again, God bless all of you. Keep your powder dry, and we'll see everybody here next week.